Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome to Shaken and Disturbed, everybody. I am Darren Karp. You're with John Thrasher. Smash that subscribe button. Look at you. Oh, yeah. We're dapping. We're doing the whole thing. It feels good to be back. We haven't been together since before Independence Day.
It's been a minute. Yeah.
Feels like a long time ago, but it's really only been basically like 10 days.
It's only been a couple days.
Maybe
really.
2 weeks, but yeah. It's been a while. And so you look refreshed. You were away on vacation. I know this is our case, so we want to get into it, but
yeah.
You had a good vacation? Yes.
I had a good vacation. Yeah. If you guys want to hear some of the things I talked about, check out this week's NMR episode.
He was so relaxed. He did something unlike him.
Yeah. That's good. That's a really good teaser there. Yeah. I was so relaxed and it was so needed. I hadn't had a really proper vacation in actually a year. The last one I took was 4th of July last year. And you know me, I love a beach. So I really enjoyed it. More on this week's NMR. I'll have some more details, some other fun things that happened to share with you guys on a future NMR. I didn't want to be like, you know, overtaking NMR about my own beach vacations. But yeah, it was good. I was in Rehoboth Beach with President Biden. And then I was in Ocean City, where I grew up going to the beach every year. So full of nostalgia.
So nice. I need to go there. I've heard it's really gorgeous.
Ocean City is... First of all, Ocean City is extremely expensive. We won't get into all this, but like, it would have been cheaper for me to fly to Miami for a week and stay in Miami than go to Ocean City, Maryland. And listen, Ocean City is great. Lots of things to do. Very family friendly. Like if you have kids and stuff, it's great for that. But it is just really just a beach. So if you're looking for something more than just the beach with
I want to try Rehoboth. Rehoboth
is great. Rehoboth is a gay beach. It's very gay friendly. The whole city is very gay friendly. It's kind of like the province town. Yeah. Well, in that you're like in that case.
You'll pass.
But anyway,
I live in LA now.
Yeah, you definitely. Yeah, good point. Good point. But yeah, it was great. So Darren, let's get into this week's case. And
yeah,
this is a fun one, right?
This was actually recommended by my dad, who was like, you should cover this case. I can't remember how he originally came upon it, but it's just one of those cases that I think is famous if you know, but not a lot of people know about it.
Ooh,
it's a little kind of a, I don't know, Bonnie and Clyde type of thing. But yeah, let's get into it. It's brought from my dad, so we can do it right up at the top.
Dad, your dad, who we are now affectionately calling Grandfather Karp, potentially.
Yeah, although
we've got
that's
uncle.
So weird. That's so weird.
Yeah, there that's was like weird a, for you. I can
when
see
they,
why that.
Yeah, when
weird.
They came to come visit, there was like a. I think there was like a homeless man on the street. Anyway, he was kind of harassing us and he was like, move over, Grandpa. And we were just like laughing. And so I called my dad Grandpa. We loved it. Anyway, let me get into Granddaddy Karp's
case.
Grandfather God.
I was like, what's the word I'm thinking? God. It was Grandfather God. Yes.
In November of 1938, Helen and Guy Starkweather welcomed their fourth child, Charlie. The Starkweathers, who made their home in Lincoln, Nebraska, were a working class family. Guy was employed as a carpenter while Helen was a waitress. And when he was very young, Charlie developed a condition called genu verum, which is a deformity often caused by rickets, which causes bow-leggedness in children. Your legs kind of curve outwards rather than being straight up and down. I believe you get rickets from like a vitamin D deficiency or that like is a contributing factor.
Wow.
But he also suffered from a speech impediment, and this combined with his bow-leggedness made him a target, obviously, for bullies at school. People suck, as we all know.
Right.
Unfortunately, his home life kind of was not much better. Guy was an abusive husband and father to his 7 children who once pushed Charlie through a window in a fit of rage.
Oh, my God. Did you just have Batman Returns vibes when What's-His-Face pushes Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman? Well, she's Selena Kyle at that point out the window.
Christopher
Walken.
Christopher Walken. He pushes
I'm forgetting
her,
what the
Selena
character's
Kyle.
Name. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that I remember watching that when I was a kid.
It's terrifying.
Very
All
disturbed
the
because,
cats start
yeah, and then
going
the
at her.
cats chew at her fingers. But like
Yeah.
even like when he's going to push her out the window, he's like, just kidding. And
Yeah.
he turns away
It's so
and she's
creepy.
like, oh, thank you. And then he pushes her out. Like Tim Burton is such a genius. It really like affected me. I was like, I don't like,
It's an
I think
iconic
about
scene.
it is. I don't mean to interrupt us, but it's like I think about it when I'm on the subway platforms too a lot, which is weird
Interesting.
because I don't want to be pushed in front of a train, of
Well,
course.
obviously,
So
this is, that's a superhero thing, and this is real life with a
and this is real
child.
life. Thank you. Sometimes I do need to remember
But
that. Yes.
yes.
Anyway.
But so he's an abusive home. And as
Yeah.
a means of
He
escape, Charlie
sucked.
retreated into the movies.
Like I
Maybe
did.
Batman. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Batman Returns.
James Dean was his idol because he identified with this sort of like bad boy, iconoclast, outsider persona. And at the age
Yeah.
of 16, Charlie left school and found work with a newspaper printer, loading papers onto trucks for distribution. Around this time, he also began dating 13-year-old Carol Ann Fugate. Now, this is it's sort of a different time, right? Like 13-year-old sort of dating a 16-year-old, like
Yeah.
that's a little taboo-ish, mildly. But if you kind of think about it as in like an eighth grader dating a sophomore junior, still pretty young. But
Yeah.
I'm just going to put it this way. It's a very old 13-year-old in sort of this case, because she's
Yeah.
what they end up doing. Now, after spending a few years working blue collar jobs, Charlie began to grow jaded of his own poverty and the idea that the poor stay poor, which somewhat it's a fairly complaint. It's a fair complaint. By the time he reached the age of 19, however, Charlie was wearing motorcycle jackets and coloring his hair black with shoe polish to emulate James Dean. To me, this is very T-Bird. I wasn't like a
Yeah.
James Dean kid. I was a Grease kid. So
Okay.
very T-Birds, John Travolta, Danny Zuko
Sure.
vibes.
Sure.
And he had also grown convinced that the only way to better his financial situation for good was through crime, not through his current job as a garbage man. And people who feel like they don't have any resort,
I was just
people
going to
who feel
say
like they're
that.
going to stay poor and need a leg up and want sort of an easier way to go about it, definitely resort to crime. It's not that unheard of.
Yeah, and also like isn't that like the main motivation of all of us? Like we all want to be doing better potentially than we are, or at least better than our parents, as they say. So unfortunately for some people, the only way that they can see a path forward is through crime
Yeah.
and drugs and things. And it's interesting because we hear about that a lot in the last couple decades, but here we are, way back in what is this now, the 50s or so. And so yeah, that was even happening back then. So on December 1st, 1957, less than a month after his 19th birthday, Charlie pulled into a gas station at around 3:30 a.m. to buy a pack of cigarettes from the night clerk, Robert Colvert. By the way, I've talked about this before.
Linford
Remember
Crawford.
Lenford Crawford? Remember that from Martinis and Murder?
Yep.
I will say 3:30 a.m. to buy a pack of cigarettes. I would like stores to go back to being open 24/7. Okay,
You
right
could live in New
around.
York City.
Well, that's true. I could. Let's try that. But
Just
also,
FYI,
I just feel like during the pandemic, for obvious reasons, things started closing earlier and they never really got back to that. And I missed being back at home in Maryland, driving to like a Walmart at like 12 o'clock when no one was there, rummaging through the barrel of DVDs just to see what's there. I would never do that in
What a
any other
wild
time.
child you
What
are.
a wild life I live, you
Really?
guys. Anyway, so he returned to the same gas station 10 minutes later, where he then purchased a pack of gum. After another 10 minutes passed, Charlie entered the gas station a third time, this time wearing a pair of leather gloves, a red bandana over his face, and carrying a 12-gauge shotgun. Probably not there to buy candy, let's just put it that way. He
Probably
ordered
not.
Robert to open the safe and fill a bag with its contents, which was around $150 in cash and $10 in coins. $150 in 1957 is significant. That's not what it sounds like to us here today.
For easy money, quote
Yeah,
unquote.
exactly.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, Charlie then forced the clerk into his car and held the gun on him as he drove. After a few minutes, Charlie ordered Robert to pull over and exit the car. A scuffle ensued. And the gun went off, apparently accidentally shooting the clerk in the process. When he realized what he'd done, Charlie shot Robert again, this time intentionally in the back of the head. I'm sure he was probably thinking, oh, well, I better make sure he can't speak or
Exactly.
whatever.
Finish the job kind of thing.
Yeah. He then got back into his car, drove home, and went to sleep for the night. How someone does that, I will never know. Robert's body tragically was found around 5 a.m., about an hour after his murder. Police who investigated the gas station assumed that they were on the hunt for some sort of transient killer here. The following day, Charlie threw his murder weapon into a river and bought $10 worth of used clothing from a nearby thrift shop, obviously paying only in coins. As we mentioned, he took $10 in coins with that. On December 7th, a week after his first murder, Charlie repainted his car black. Oh,
Wow.
just something casual. And changed his tires in an attempt to prevent the police from matching his tire treads to the ones at the crime scene. So this
Not for
is,
nothing, but
yeah.
I'm watching Forensic Files last night with my father, and
Yeah.
because you know,
Of
granddaddy God
course.
and father
Right.
God, and you know, it's kind of amazing what they can determine
Even
with
in, yeah.
having a car, certain types of paint. For
Yeah.
him to know at this point, I mean, okay, maybe repainting your car, but changing the tires, that's
Yeah.
pretty smart. I'm not,
That is very
you
smart.
know.
And we go back and forth with how smart some of these criminals are. And this one's, they're frankly not always thinking about that,
Yeah, not necessarily intelligent, but like clever. I'll say that, you
That's a
know.
good way to put it.
Yeah.
Well, he also made a point of continuing to use the gas station so as not to divert from his normal behavior. And I think that might be a how did you just put it? Not intelligent, but smart. Is that what you said?
Clever. Yeah,
Clever.
smart
Yeah,
and
yeah,
clever.
yeah.
Yeah.
So up to this point, all of Charlie's criminal tactics were ones that he claimed to have picked up by reading comic books. Hey,
This is you
listen,
with the
that's how I
Batman. This is you with the Batman reference, my friends.
literally exactly what I was thinking. And I will say, comic books, listen, yeah, they're fictional characters, they're superheroes, they're crazy, but the joy of comic books, and I will say, especially in 1950, where they were sort of in their like golden heyday,
Sure.
as they call it, the stories were very beautiful and compelling. So it does make sense that some of this is sort of filtering into someone's criminal tactics, as I said.
Totally. Well, in early January of 1958, Charlie lost his garbage man job, fouled by his apartment when he was unable to make rent. He began sleeping in his car at night. Charlie's relationship with 16-year-old Carol also began to deteriorate, and the two fought publicly almost every day. Carol's grandparents noticed that the young girl had gained weight recently and were concerned about the possibility of her getting, or at least already being, pregnant with Charlie's baby. She's pretty young, she's 16.
Yeah.
Now, Carol's parents, Marion and Velda Bartlett, decided, Marion and Velda, what a name,
Yeah. Like
decided she was,
hey, it's the 1950s.
well, yeah, decided that she was just spending too much time with Charlie and forbade her from seeing him anymore. On January 21st, Charlie borrowed his brother's 22 hunting rifle with a story about how he planned to go hunting with Carol's father, Marion, you know, a seemingly easy story. And around 1 p.m. that afternoon, Charlie showed up unannounced to the Bartlett house where an argument broke out almost instantly. Carol's mother, Velda, hit Charlie repeatedly in the face, telling him never to come back. Yes.
Sorry, I just wanted to jump in too. You almost wonder too here. We don't have all the details, but you wonder if he's like worried that they're on to him, or like what his stress level would be at this point, knowing that
I mean,
what
this
he's
man could kill
done.
someone and then go back to sleep. So, like,
Yeah,
I don't
right.
know how much, I don't know how much worry there is
That's a good
necessarily,
point.
just
Yeah.
so like I'm gonna make it happen.
Right.
So Charlie leaves after Velda basically hits him and kicks him out, but he returns 15 minutes later to retrieve his gun, at which point Marion forced Charlie to leave the father. Charlie drove down to a nearby grocery store to telephone Marion's job, letting him know the man was sick and wouldn't be at
Wow.
work for a few days. That's intense.
I feel like that's another level of
I mean, he's
like,
young.
yeah, and it's another level of like I think tactics, I guess you could say. Like, I wonder if he learned something like this in a comic book,
Well,
and
I
if
was going to say,
so,
this does
which
seem
one?
like a little bit like that, you know, like, oh, yeah, he's
For
not going to show
sure.
up to work. Like, it does seem like something you'd see in the movies.
For sure.
So Charlie returns to the Bartlett home after he makes his call around 3 p.m., and another fight immediately broke out between him and Carol's parents. Velda hit Charlie in the face again. Charlie hits back, which started a full-out brawl between Charlie and Marion.
Yeah.
And Charlie starts be he starts loading his rifle. Marion leaves the room and returns a few moments later with a hammer. This is
Oh my
intense.
God.
I'm not sure how well
Yeah.
a hammer is going to do against a gun, but Charlie then
Yeah.
fired one shot into Marion's head, reloaded, fired another shot into Velda's face as she began lifting a knife towards him.
Oh my
Wow.
God. Wow.
At some point, Carol's 2.5-year-old baby sister, Betty Jean, also entered the room. Charlie hit her in the face with a gun, 2.5-year-old sister.
Disgusting.
Carol claims that she arrived home from school around 3:30, and when she did, Charlie explained that he was holding the family hostage and that he planned to kill them if Carol didn't cooperate with him.
Oh my God.
It's likely that all three family members were dead by this point, with their bodies stacked in an outdoor shed. Do you remember that movie Fear with Reese Witherspoon and Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah.
And he like holds the family hostage.
Oh, and he holds them hostage. Like,
yeah. That's kind of like this.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it was inspired by this story to some degree. Yeah. So this tragically continues at around 6:30 a.m. the following morning. Carol phoned a friend to tell her that she'd come down with the flu and wouldn't be able to come to school. Remember, she's 16. Charlie and Carol spent the next week living in the Bartlett's home with a note posted on the front door reading, quote, "Stay away. Everybody is sick with the flu. Miss Bart, you know, signed Miss Bartlett," end quote. We should mention here, it looks like the word flu was spelled F-L-U-E. Maybe that's how they spelled it in the, you know, in the 50s. You never know. Some of that tends to happen, but nonetheless, an interesting detail. On Monday, January 27th, Carol's grandmother, Pansy, tried to come by and visit, but Carol refused to let her in.
It's also unclear how Carol's feeling at this point, if she feels against her will or if she really is a willing participant in all of this right now.
Yeah, that's right. Pansy phoned the authorities around 9:30 a.m., concerned that there was something wrong, requesting that the police conduct a wellness check, good for Pansy, on it. Carol and Charlie left the home just after Pansy. When the police arrived with Pansy at around 10 a.m., the two were already gone. Police found the home empty. Remember the situation of the bodies in the shed, however.
Right.
Police, like I said, were looked around. Charlie and Carol ended up driving to a nearby service station where Carol stopped to use the bathroom. While in the gas station, she wrote a note that read, quote, "Help police, don't ignore," end quote. She kept the note in her pocket, but never gave it to anyone. So she wrote it.
So that's interesting. She's clearly thinking something, but she's not. It's hard to say. She's not doing everything that she possibly can run away necessarily, but it's I don't know.
And to your point, you know, as a reminder, she is 16. Maybe she feels the fear of whatever he could potentially do. I mean, her family is in this shed. I mean,
she's writing this note for a reason.
Scared as hell. Totally. Right. So the couple then drove to the home of Charlie's friend, a 70-year-old man named August Meyer. As they arrived, their car actually got stuck in the mud. August offered to use his horses to help Charlie unstick his car. As the two walked to the stables, Charlie shot the elderly man with his shotgun. Now, Carol waited in the kitchen as Charlie looted August's home for all of the valuables that he could get. So this guy is just on a fucking rampage at this point.
It's insane.
Yeah.
At 7:30 that same evening, as Charlie and Carol left August's home on foot, 17-year-old Robert Jensen and 16-year-old Carol King saw the pair. Carol King is like
Carol
a famous songwriter. Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, Carol King. 16-year-old Carol King saw the pair walking and offered them a ride. Once in the car, Charlie held his gun to Robert's head and ordered him to drive toward Lincoln. About an hour and a half later, Charlie ordered Robert to pull the car over by an old storm cellar. Charlie forced Jensen and King down into it, shooting them both in the back of the head as they descended the steps, which is just
tragic.
Awful.
Yeah.
Carol waited in the car for Charlie to return, at which point they took the car and resumed driving to Lincoln. Now, see, in this scenario, like, could she have fled? Maybe. I don't know how successful she would have been with him with a gun. If he noticed it, was she chained to the car? Is she complicit?
And it's also just interesting. You have to wonder, too, what is his motivation for keeping her alive? You know, we could speculate about all different things at this point.
Unless they're partners or.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, are they partners in this? But we'll, I think we'll find out.
Right, because he clearly he's not holding her for ransom. And he clearly, if anything, she'd just be a burden. Another mouth to feed or take care of or whatever.
Right.
So.
Right.
Now, first, they attempted to return to the Bartlett home, but realized they had to keep moving when they saw police in front of the house.
Wow.
Realizing they needed somewhere to lay low, Charlie drove around looking for a house that looked easy to enter. It's kind of just so vigilante.
It is, yeah. So he's like on a rampage, like I was saying.
Around 8:30 in the next morning, Charlie finally picked a home that looked promising and ordered Carol to wait in the car while he went to investigate, knocking on the windows of the home with his rifle. Not terrifying at all.
I know, like the visuals of this, and shout out to Megan, who did a great job of explaining a lot of this so well with the research that we had. It's very like you kept saying, like cinematic almost. Like it's stuff that you literally have seen in movies and He just sounds like the ultimate villain. You know what I
Right.
mean? Like tapping on a window with a rifle,
No,
I
that's
don't
like
know
some thick
what I
shit you
would
see in
do.
The Wire. Like, that's
That's what I
just.
mean. Yeah.
So Lillian Finkel, a maid who worked in the home, opened the door, and Charlie began brandishing his gun, demanding to be let inside.
Wow.
Lillian happened to be deaf, and when Charlie realized this, he began writing notes to her, which is just, I can only imagine what she's thinking if he's like with a gun. Like, I don't know if that makes you less scared or more scared, the fact that you can't hear him. Charlie ordered Lillian to put the dog in a bathroom and demanded the lady of the house, a woman named Clara Ward, to come downstairs. Clara greeted Charlie like a guest, even invited Carol inside, served them breakfast, and she and Lillian just began cleaning the house to pass the time.
Oh, just casual, just a guy with a big rifle
Kind of
hanging
nuts.
out. Yeah, so around 1 p.m., Clara asked to go upstairs to change her shoes, but didn't return. Charlie went upstairs to check on her half an hour later. Upstairs, he found Clara armed with her own 22 caliber pistol, which she fired at him.
Wow.
Charlie threw a knife at Clara, hitting her in the back. Like, what in the like Marvel Studios is going on
Exactly.
here? He then took her gun and brought it back downstairs to Carol, ordering her to guard the maid. When Charlie returned to Clara, he found her trying to use the phone, so he tied her up and left her on the bed. Throughout the rest of the day, Charlie ransacked the house for valuables until Clara's husband returned home around 6 p.m. As you might expect, another struggle ensued, during which time Charlie was able to shoot Mr. Ward. This guy is getting, like, frankly, kind of lucky with all of these things.
Oof.
I mean, this woman, Clara, had her own gun, and he still managed to kind
Well,
of come
that's what
out
I'm
on
saying.
top.
And she's like kind of trapped him by coming upstairs. I mean,
Right. Yeah. Well, shortly thereafter, Charlie and Carol brought Lillian, the maid, upstairs and killed both her and Clara before leaving the home for good around 7 p.m. in the Ward's car. So now they have their car as well. So they've changed out, the situation there. Charlie didn't want to hang on to his stolen car, as I was just mentioning, for too long, as he was worried that the police might be on the lookout for it. This guy is
makes
really
sense.
good at being a really bad person. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, he's good at doing the best he can at 19 or 20 at this point to evade police with a fucking 16-year-old. I mean, so on Wednesday afternoon, January 29th, one of Mr. Ward's business associates came to his home, found the three bodies in the house, and alerted the authorities. The governor was horrified and actually enlisted the FBI plus 200 National Guard members to begin patrolling Lincoln to hunt for Charlie and Carol. Kind of incredible for teenagers.
Yeah, for
I don't mean that
sure.
in a good way. I'm just saying, like, they're evading. A bulletin appeared on television and the radio asking local men to help with the search, although they probably had an easier time just being at least looking somewhat innocent in that way, just not. So thousands of local families left their garage doors open with their keys in the car. Just in case Charlie and Carol came by, they could simply steal their cars without taking any lives. So they're just letting it happen, which
That's
is nuts to me.
nuts. It's tragic, but it's also so smart. Like,
I mean, it
geez, I
is and it
didn't
isn't, because now you're like kind of encouraging him to come
inviting
and take.
them.
Yeah, it's like it's a little bit of the Barbra Streisand effect. It's like, don't look here, don't look here, but we're just gonna now look here,
Okay, I hadn't heard of that effect before in that
Yeah,
way, so
don't you
that's
ever? There
interesting.
was the Barbra Streisand effect is like she had a. She was building like this ginormous house, and like a magazine or something showed what it was like. And she like sued the magazine because she didn't want anyone seeing their house, which caused people
Oh, I
to give the
see.
house attention, which is exactly
Oh, I
what
had
she
not
didn't
heard of
want.
that.
So it's like the Barbra Streisand effect. It's like, don't think
Yeah,
of a white
that's,
elephant, and all
yeah.
you're thinking of is a white elephant.
I see what you're saying. That's smart.
So a local radio station offered a $100 reward leading to the couple's capture, which is not that much, but okay, it's a radio station.
Fair enough.
Get the local kids on it. Not to be outdone, the mayor for Lincoln offered a $500 reward, and the governor offered up $1,000 for the same information.
And
Now,
like I
around
said, this is now we're talking
50s,
significant money
60s,
for the
yeah.
50s.
Around 2:30 that afternoon, Charlie pulled over the Ward stolen car when he saw a man by the name of Merle Collision sleeping in his own vehicle on the side of the lawn. That's an interesting last name.
Of the road,
Of the road, sorry.
it's okay.
Charlie demanded the man trade cars with him before firing 9 shots
Oh my
into him and
God.
stealing the car and ordering Carol to sit in the back seat. Why ask him to switch and then just kill him? Just, I don't get it.
I mean, I would assume at this point, just based on his behavior, that he's doing this so that they can't
They're just
speak to the
never going to speak. Yeah,
police.
they're just
Yeah,
never going
that's
to
the only
speak.
thing that seems to make sense here because, yeah, I mean, if he's just going to keep taking cars, Why do these
The guy's
heinous
name was Merle
murders?
Collision. I mean,
I
what a
mean, what a
name.
that's an
There's
interesting
another
name.
great name that I'm about to add to this story. Now, as Charlie was trying to get the car started, the handbrake was actually stuck. A man named Joe Sprinkle happened to
What?
drive
Okay.
by.
What in
Yep.
the Harry Potter's going on here? But okay.
That's a great name for a cat, Joe Sprinkle. He happened he
Yes.
was happening he was happening to drive by and noticed Carol crying in the back seat. He then saw Merle's lifeless body shoved in the front footwell and realized something was terribly wrong. Joe pulled his car over and grabbed for the distracted Charlie's gun, which started a fist fight between the two men as Charlie scrambled to retrieve his weapon.
Let's go Joe Sprinkle, by the way. Like,
Yeah, all
it
right,
takes a lot of
Sprinky. All
guts.
right, Sprinky.
And I wonder if Joe Sprinkle knew about, I don't mean to be make fun of this here, it's a just funny name, you guys, but
Yes.
I wonder if he knew about this. There was a huge FBI investigation, so I wonder
Right.
how aware, how big was this on the media in 1958 or
Right,
whenever this happened.
exactly.
Yeah. Well, the local deputy sheriff happened to also drive by at exactly the right time to see the two men brawling in the street. Carol immediately left the stolen car and got into the police car, screaming, "He's going to kill me. He's crazy. He's just killed a man." So, and by the way, we did mention, we kind of jumped over this. She was crying in the back seat. I feel like that's a great indicator that she's a part
She's
of
not
this
happy
against
with
her
this.
will. Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah.
just to be clear. But in the confusion, Charlie managed to get back into the ward's stolen car and drove off. However, as you know, police were now able to identify Charlie and guess the direction he might be headed. They set up a roadblock further down the highway that he had escaped down, but Charlie drove through it at over 100 miles per hour. So very, very like, did you
Jeez.
say Bonnie and Clyde earlier? It kind of
A
did
little bit
sound
like that. I
something
mean,
like that.
obviously, I think Bonnie was probably more willing than
Right.
maybe Carol, but a little Bonnie and
Yeah,
Clyde-ish.
for sure. Well, a vicious shootout ensued, and after all the windows were shot out of Charlie's stolen car, he finally surrendered to the authorities. Charlie himself had sustained a fair amount of damage and was covered in blood. Authorities suspected that he only surrendered because he feared he was bleeding out and may die.
Wow.
Isn't it funny how these murderers are such, they don't want to die. They don't want to be bleeding out. I'm like, you just killed like 55
Right.
million people, you idiot.
Right.
Anyway, the following day, January 30th, 1958, Charlie was charged with first-degree murder of Merle Collision. Carol, excuse me, was taken into custody at the same time as Charlie, at which time she began demanding she be allowed to call her parents and began screaming and crying when informed that they were actually dead. Remember, they were part of the shed situation
Right, but
earlier on.
I would think that, I mean, I guess.
That she would know.
I would think so, but
Yeah.
I don't know. Now,
I
while
mean,
in custody,
also, I was just going to say, maybe Charlie was telling her the wrong information. Maybe
well,
he was saying
that's
they're hanging out in the shed, but not that they were alive.
right, because I mean, he did say, like, unless you do what I want, I'm going to kill everyone. Now, they're probably already
Right.
likely dead, but just
Right.
I don't know. Now, while in custody, Charlie submitted several lengthy formal statements, which included confessions to the police. During this time, Charlie referred to Carol as a captive and assured authorities that she didn't have anything to do with the murders. Okay. Charlie's trial began on May 5th, 1959, and his defense team defied Charlie's wishes by offering an insanity defense, perhaps the only viable avenue open to them with the confessions and statements also in play, because he is admitting to all of this stuff. The
Right.
defense team brought in medical professionals to testify that Charlie had received a bad blow to the head while at work, which may have led to his criminal behavior. And
Yeah.
Carol's attorney did not allow her to testify, instructing her to invoke the Fifth Amendment if she was called by either side. Probably good to do for a young kid like that, on
Yeah.
because she, you don't want to perjure yourself. On May 22nd, the jury found Charlie guilty of 2 counts of first degree murder, recommending to be sentenced to death. On July 3rd, 1958, the grand jury ruled that Carol would be tried as an adult for her role in the murder spree, and her murder trial began on October 27th.
Yeah, and really quickly before we wrap up this case, the blow to the head situation at work, that really reminded me of the Aaron Hernandez case and how,
Yes, well, CTE and
yeah, exactly. I was just getting to that. And like, that
yeah.
it sounds weird to us probably than some of you guys listening, but it really, I mean, they studied Aaron Hernandez's brain and it was severely damaged. And that really does have a play on your
Remember,
mental
Oxygen did a
capacity.
special on that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, on November 5th, it was announced that Charlie would be called to testify against Carol. Charlie had actually flipped on Carol and was now claiming that she was responsible for several of the murders during the spree. A police officer who was on the scene at the time of her arrest was also called to testify. He stated that when Carol was arrested, she had numerous newspaper clippings about her family's death in her pockets, which is an interesting detail here. Another officer was called to testify that when he spoke to Carol just after her arrest, she mentioned seeing her family killed and included some extremely specific details that turned out to be correct. So this is obviously pointing to the fact that she was pretending to some degree.
Wasn't as innocent maybe as, yes.
As she might have said. However, let's also take into consideration, maybe she was traumatized. Maybe she didn't remember these things. I mean,
exactly.
Imagine
We're
being
never
on
gonna
a...
know, unfortunately.
Yeah, like a several day manhunt with someone else who's killing everyone. I mean, that's traumatic in and of itself. But nonetheless, Carol was sentenced to life in prison. On June 25th, 1959, Charlie's sentence was carried out and he was executed via the electric chair. You don't hear that too often. Carol spent 18 years in a Nebraska women's prison where she was known to be a model prisoner, actually, before being granted parole in 1976.
Wow.
Nearly 20 years later, several of the officers involved in her case continued to protest her parole, actually, believing her to be just as guilty of the murders as Charlie. One sheriff even insisted, quote, "She told me they made up a story to make her look good so she could get off. They tied up her hands and she worked them around so she got rope burns on her wrist. That way they could say that she was a prisoner," end quote.
Mm.
Yeah, so really a unfortunate case with a sadly a string of dead bodies all over Nebraska and in the Lincoln area there.
Yeah,
so.
And just careless kind of for no reason and just sad, feeling like a last resort and people feeling desperate kind of resort to the worst measures. And so just Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah.
Good case suggestion from Granddaddy Carp and Granddaddy God. But
That's right.
Shitty all around.
I wonder... Do you know what kind of motivated him? Did he hear about this somewhere? Maybe you mentioned it at the top of the show.
Yeah, I mentioned it at the top, but I couldn't remember. Sorry. I'm going to have to go back to it. But he just remembered this case from when he was a kid.
Oh, right. When he was a kid.
Because he was born in like 1950. So I think he just remembered this specific case, I guess, because they were young and, you know.
And frankly, you know, long serial killers like that in the 50s weren't as common yet. I feel like serial killers
surely
really
this would have been a major
own.
News story considering the age and considering how many people.
That's
but
exactly
yeah,
what
it was just
at.
Interesting.
Yeah, so let us know what you guys think. Hit us up on social media, Jay Thrasher, Carpe Darren. Hit us up on our Facebook group if you're not there yet. It's a lot of fun. Lots of us are in there chatting. And if you're a Patreon member, you can DM us or comment on this week's case, and we may read it on a future episode. In fact, Darren, we have a comment from a Patreon subscriber.
Yes.
Sandy, why don't you get us into our listener shout-outs?
Yeah, Sandy on Patreon listened and watched our last full episode, about the Picton Pig Farm, which was a particularly disgusting episode, Picton Pig Farm Massacres, and said, quote, "I just watched the documentary on this, and it was a lot different than the episode. What a creeper."
Yeah, and hopefully, Sandy, that's a positive thing. Like, we were hoping to bring some new information or even just a different way to like kind of analyze what was happening there. So thank you. I'm sure it was. And thank you, Sandy, for that.
Yeah.
Kylie in our Facebook group was listening to us talk on episode 164 about expiration dates. Darren, you know, I was worried about certain things in my refrigerator being able to be eaten by or used by. She says, quote, "Listening to episode 164, wanted to chime in on the subject of expiration dates. My parents live in Oregon, and we typically visit with my sister, around the holidays, where our favorite family game is guess the oldest expiration date in the fridge. My mom just remodeled their kitchen and was throwing out items in the pantry from Y2K, aka the year 2000, for those who don't know. And she had a jar of beans from 1992. Darren's laughing, you guys.
Okay, 34 years. All right.
That's, and I feel you on that. I don't know if I mentioned it in this
episode. Sorry, 32 years. That's insane. That's
whatever
insane.
It is. Yeah, that's insane. My grandparents are the same. Like, I'll go to my grandparents' house and I'm like, we cannot keep
also,
a jar of tomatoes.
But aren't things jarred supposed to keep forever? I mean, isn't this what they have in The Walking
Dead? That's a good
dead?
Point.
I mean, jarred things.
It's true, but I think just by the nature of being organic things, they are meant to deteriorate. So you may technically be able to eat a jar of beans from 1992. Should you? Will it taste good?
I don't know if you
probably
should,
not.
But I feel like maybe you could.
Yeah, you probably could, but it wouldn't taste great. So, Kylie, thank you for that really funny comment.
Yes. And guys, don't forget to join us on Patreon, where we're posting bonus episodes, videos, and tons of other fun features. For as little as $5 a month, you get years of goodies.
Yeah, we've been doing that since we launched the show 2021. So now's a great time to sign up. You can actually even get it cheaper when you sign up annually. It really does help us keep making new episodes and paying all of our bills for the show, which are, you know, starting to add up after all these years. Let's just put it that way.
Yes.
And if you're already a patron, thank you so much for your support.
Yes, thank you so
it
much.
Really does mean the most to us. So we appreciate each and every one of you guys that sign up or are considering signing up.
Yes. And John, we're happy you're back from vacation.
Thank you, guys.
Let us know in case suggestions obviously come those through. But we will be back next week with another new case and another new MNMR.
Yeah. Take your vitamins, by the way.
And check your pits, especially if you have a peenie, a pee-pee.
Oh, okay. All right. See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.